What kind of a hand have we been dealt as women today, and how can we best play it? It's a large question that's always lurking in the background, and since the answers aren't obvious, I find women's lives to be immediately suspenseful and interesting. Don't you? Wait a minute. Who am I? I'm Abigail L. Rosenthal, Professor of Philosophy Emerita at Brooklyn College of the City University of New York. And while my advice has always been not to take my advice, I do write a weekly blog I call Dear Abby, the Non-Advice Column. And so, dear listener, I invite you to pull up a chair at this virtual cafe table, no matter your gender, age, convictions, or style of life. Brokenness. By brokenness, I mean what occurs in our psyches, not what happens when a vase shatters on a tile floor. But what is this psychic brokenness? It seems to occur in our conviction that something, whatever it is, that we prized is lost, ruined, or tarnished, dishonored, or left behind, irreparably. We know when a shattered vase is reparable and what sort of glue repairs it. We also pretty much know when the vase is beyond repair and must be discarded. In the human case, what's broken seems always to call for repairs, whether the fix-up is available or not. A friend of mine, to be accurate, an ex-friend, often said that there were two classes of people in the world, those whose mothers loved them and the rest. This divide was, she would say, irreparable. I once met her mother and must agree that I never saw a woman who so much reminded me of Hitler. So my poor friend was correct, so far as her literal one and only mother was concerned. Her mother was, to borrow from Thomas Wolfe, lost and by the wind grieved. And with a mother like that, Wolfe would have been spot on to add, "You can't go home again." But that's why God invented substitution. My friend did get a husband who loved her, as her mother ought to have done, and she did get me, who would have done as much as a woman friend can if she hadn't decided to take needless offense and ditch me. Substitution is an art form, too. Don't shatter the substitute just because it's not the original. We can't help our place on life's timeline. On the other hand, if you've not found a persuasive substitute, don't pretend that the original is not still regretted. Don't make the first love nothing as a kind of revenge against it for being absent or in self-protective amnesia. My first love had the long penciled eyes and eyebrows that you find on archaic Greek statues. He disappointed me, though we loved each other, I think, on the level of the soul. When we parted, he handled it however he wanted to, but I refused to erase his image from my psyche. Years years later, I would repair to the Metropolitan Museum in my old neighborhood, where I found a portrait bust of a 5th century Greek youth who looked like him. I would stand before it and just let myself undergo my helpless longing. Almost every love thereafter seemed either an imitation or a negative, and thus also a reminder of that original. As a point of principle, I never, never made any effort to forget. Unlike those predecessors, Jerry does not resemble my first love, nor does he remind me of him. What was fragmentary in that love is completed and transcended. What was posed or fragile is now unfrozen and natural, having its horizon at the future. Because I honored the fragments, I know where they've been filled in. When I was a graduate student in philosophy, I wanted somehow to combine the vulnerable and threatened aspirations of romantic youth with the inviolable, above-the-battle verities of philosophy. It seemed a half-formed, vague, and childish wish, one that could give no sober discursive account of itself, much less offer an argument on its own behalf. Today, I believe that was what was smartest about me. Ayaan Hirsi Ali, one of the bravest, most beautiful, charitable, and clear-seeing women of our era, reports being struck by the solemn seriousness and wholehearted commitment of the American wedding ceremony. Yeomi Park, the lovely young woman who managed to escape from the hell on earth that is North Korea, says that she first realized that not all the people in this world were living like us when she saw a smuggled-in copy of the movie Titanic with its tragic romance. There are no love stories, no Romeo and Juliet in North Korea. The idea that you could give up your life out of love for a particular man or woman, not for the regime, was mind-blowing, Yeomi recollects. It gave me my first taste of freedom. I am not maintaining that a life where, as in the love ballads, the rose twines round the briar is the only kind of life worth having. Not at all. There are many types of lives, seasons of a life, and worthy aims. That said, if true love of the romantic kind is not one's deepest wish, or not available for whatever reason, it is still of ultimate importance to act and to be in the world so as to be worthy of it. I could not love thee, dear, so much, loved I not honor more. So says the poet, but just as true, honor would be vainglory were it not the eligibility and the credential for romance.
Thanks so much, dear listener. If this added value to your life, I'd be happy if you subscribed. You can find me at www.com. abigailrosenthal.com. I've written a book called A Good Look at Evil, and if that's not too scary for you, you can buy it on Amazon. Another book is called Confessions of a Young Philosopher, and that's forthcoming soon with illustrations.